I want to ask one of the Jeremys in the back of the room, is it possible to dim the lights a little bit so we can see the images more?
So we want to go into this world, and Stephen has put together a beautiful slideshow here, which I was only able to be part of. Just go back into this world that is common to all of us. And there are variations on it. This is a particularly northern version, but it's all over the world.
Is that better?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. And even these ones up here, well, maybe you want to see Robin and me if you can stand it. Okay. All right. So Joseph Campbell, by the way, in addition to calling these the herds of eternity, also referred to this chamber as the Sistine Chapel of the Paleolithic era. He had a good sense of humor. Robin and I have been visiting the Dordogne in south central France for many years and gone into many of the caves and seen these original places. We've also led tours to the caves of the Dordogne, and they are really, really quite extraordinary and quite wonderful. And I think you can see, if you look up here, oops, where do we go? Here we go. If you look up here, how safe a sanctuary this might be, especially if you had a ladder or a rope, you could pull it up after you, and the predatory animals couldn't get at you, and it's naturally lends itself to caves, this area, limestone of the Dordogne, and that's why they sought them out. Oh, I guess we do have it here.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry.
You went back.
All right, here we go.
Now, one of the things about those caves, by the way, is that they're a lot more than most of us know about. So if you can't get to some of the big ones and it's very crowded, pick up a local guidebook and look around. They're in people's backyards. They are everywhere. And
they've
there
been
are
there
huge
for a long
ones
time.
With lots of images that you can go in all by yourself and hang out. You know, it's just they're off the records. They're amazing.
Just so you know how long shamanism has been going on, this is called the Sorcier of Les Trois Frères, and this is a shaman from the Huichol Indians of Mexico, a different continent and maybe 20 to 30,000 years apart. The
More
bow
than that.
Was not only used as a hunting instrument, but as a magic instrument to lure the animals toward one and to kind of sing their sacred songs. As Robin was saying, hunting was a sacred profession. Campbell would say that saying grace, blessing the food that you eat because you know it was alive and running around on 4 feet a few hours before, blessing that food, asking for the animals to come back, was an important part of Paleolithic religion. And here's the peyote shaman doing the same thing, playing his bow. Now I'm going to invite Robin to talk about this because this is one of Campbell's pet peeves, that art historians look at this thing and they say, you can see this in great expensive art books. It's a hunting accident. Campbell goes, why would they say that? Anybody who knows a thing about the Paleolithic psyche would know that the shamans would never depict a hunting accident. By homeopathic magic, that would bring it about. So Robin, why don't you talk about this a little bit?
Okay. Well, this is a beautiful little piece. The Kalima shaman over here in his feathered cloak with his bird-headed staff.
And here's a bird staff.
This is maybe possibly as early as 100 BC, but no, maybe 200, maybe not, maybe later, maybe post. But there are a lot of these little Kalima figures. So here he is. He can fly in his bird cloak. Now that's a figure, if you're into fairy tales, that you've run into a lot, because it stayed with us. So here's the shaman here. He's got a bird-headed staff.
And he's got a bird mask.
He's
just
got
like
a bird mask on his head, and we'll see others wearing bird masks. The hat has a little beak on it, but there's a reason for that that's other than the beak. He's got an erection, which sometimes happens in violent death, but it also happens in trance, when the whole body is energized and just fired up. And then he's looking at this marvelous bison here, this aurochs. And the aurochs has been struck by a spear. We're talking about these ceremonies. It's not just painted, it's going to look like this. this is a trance experience, and there are still people alive who have seen some of these ceremonies take place among hunting peoples who are probably now all living on the outside of cities looking for work. But these things 40 and 50 years ago were still happening, and some of them are still going on. So you draw in the sand, you draw an animal, and everybody is standing around it chanting. This is drawn, painted on the wall of the cave. The spear has now penetrated, and there's a ceremony and some dancing that went with that. Here are his entrails all coming out. This is a lot of food for the people.
And as Campbell would also point out, I mean, you could say this kind of irreverently, people just don't know how to read an image, read this as a hunting accident. There's so many things that say it's not. But actually what you can say is that it scared the shit out of this bison to see that the animal was so successfully hunted.
Well, these are those interesting little multiple dots that are always so curious, yeah. So it can be an experience of trance. It can be a shamanic dream that the shaman who's the most skilled at dreaming what they need for the hunt. And these are skills that Native Americans who are friends of ours, that like they have a grandfather or a great-grandmother who was a dreamer of the hunt. These people are still around. They're probably still people who can do it. So it could, and it's also a representation left for us of an event that happened in that place in a ritual with everybody there. So
these are a bunch of guys dressed in the raiment, as it were, of the El Chiringa times, the spirit times. And here's another Aboriginal painting these spirit forms and these magic portals on a rock. It's quite something to visit this rock. It is at a place that called by the English Ayers Rock, and called by the Aboriginals Uluru. So it's quite a place to visit if you've never been there.
And the interesting thing about these people is these are contemporary guys. This is a recent photograph, you know. They have jobs. A lot of them work on the ranches. Some of them are mechanics. They still carry on their community rituals that connect them with the ancestors and the land and the animals.
It was one of these modern Aboriginals that I saw. I used to think that the spear thrower, called the atlatl, was a very primitive device until I saw one of these guys throw one. And they can skewer a kangaroo on the leap. It's quite amazing. Okay, so what is a shaman? First of all, the word comes possibly from the ancient Sanskrit, shramana, and we'll talk about that. But more directly and immediately, it comes from the Tungus of Eastern Siberia. And there are elements, archetypal elements, spontaneous vocation. The shaman is called to the profession. Sometimes they inherit it. Those are the lesser shamans. The greater shamans are called by the spirits. There's a crisis or an ordeal of initiation. Initiation is central to the shaman. The death experience, that has to be built into it. Death is the great transformer. And that leads, of course, to rebirth and transformation. The mastery of spiritual power, the helping animals, spirit guides and allies, and then, not least in importance, is the life of service and healing defined in relation to the community. People have said, oh, I know about shamanism. That's the teachings of Don Juan. I say, no. Don Juan was a brujo, a sorcerer. He was learning sorcery. He wasn't a shaman. He didn't serve the community. He didn't heal people. He was interested in magic. So actually, at around the same time as the teachings of Don Juan came out, my book, The Shaman's Doorway, came out. It's sort of a Campbellian, rather scholarly look at it. And I talk about these stages of mythic engagement. Mythic identity, which is the recognition of the sacred. Mythic orthodoxy, which is what that third lecture is going to be about. How do you turn a beautiful mystical contact with the mysterium tremendum et fascinans, the mystery of the spiritual heart of the universe, how do you turn that into a religion where everybody sits in pews and walks flat-footed into the building and sings a few hymns and then goes home? How does that happen? And then there is an objective phase, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, in which you say, wait a minute, all religious forms miss the point. They're like empty shells that house the sacred. And then, so that leads to suspended engagement, modern science, and a refusal to accept any established forms as pointing to the sacred. And this is what I call the zone of primary meaning, the zone of the mythical symbols. Shamans love to fly. And here is one of these Kolima pieces. This is about 1100 BC, Robin?
No, I read more recently, maybe 1 or 200 BC. To
1 or 200 BC?
Yeah,
okay.
More recent than we thought.
And he's riding a drum.
These things are disputable.
And that's why the Christian missionaries took away the drums of the aboriginals and the shamans, so they couldn't go into ecstasy. They couldn't go into trance. Now, here I call this Paleolithic bungee jumping. Here, they were doing it even back when. And this is a photo, it's not my photo, it's somebody else's photo, of what this guy looks like on the way down. Now, modern bungee jumping is one thing because you've got modern materials. These guys have vines and they usually survive, not always. It's kind of dangerous.
So, death and rebirth. And I've been trying to remember how to say the name of this fascinating being, Wallowluk or something, Gunuk, I forget it. This is the spirit of rising bubbles. And I'm told it's a killer whale fin you're seeing, not a shark. This is a killer whale. Now, we don't think of the killer whale as quite as terrifying, perhaps, as somebody who's encountering it in a skin kayak and perhaps even needing to eat it and knowing that it could eat them. So two hunter tribes meeting each other in the water. So the rising bubbles have an ominous feel to them, the spirit of rising bubbles, what bubbles up from the depths. The Inuit masks, I think, are the eeriest, the most spirit-infested, invested, and sometimes the craziest, because when you go into these spaces, it's pretty crazy and hard to get back a lot of the time. This is from Chichen Itza.
We were just down in Chichen Itza and heard again from a guide the story of the wall on which these skulls, every one of these is different. And they are the heads of the captains of the ball-playing teams who played in the ball courts and were sacrificed. There's a big argument about whether it was the winners that were sacrificed or the losers that were sacrificed. In any case, they're at the end of the game, their heads were cut off and impaled on little spikes on the wall, and they were left to sit there until they looked more or less like this, as a kind of a reminder of the transience of life. And you notice, of course, the skull. Skull shows up everywhere in shamanism. We're going to see lots and lots of this imagery. And here, again, is the bow. And this is an asymmetrical mask here, so we know that it's a spirit.
Near Chichen Itza, there's another a place where we have a lot of these walls that we got to look at up close. And in both places, we saw images that had to do with birth and death together, where you have these images of skulls, and then you have a woman giving birth, crouching and giving birth, and sometimes it's a goddess giving birth, but some of these places were places to bless birthing. And above them and below them, these terrifying skulls.
That was Tulum, Robin, I think. Yeah.
It was Tulum, yeah. The one that we saw the really, thank you for reminding me.
So, Mahakala, great time. The Christian missionaries were horrified when they first saw iconography like this or like this in India. They said, oh, those pagans, those barbarians, until you realize that their central icon is a dead man on a cross or a man being killed on a cross. And okay. So these are the portal mysteries. Birth and death are the portal mysteries of our life.
You mentioned the hands?
Oh, you go ahead.
Okay, all right. Well, Kala Kali, Black time, is crouching on bodies, male and female, and surrounded by the fires of time and destruction of everything. And at the same time, you look at these two beautiful ladies on either side. She's touching. This is boon bestowing and touching the earth like the Buddha. But also, all good things are here. You know, life is beautiful.
Campbell loved these images. This is our own photograph from up near Tibet, but we saw it.
Mudra.
We realized that Joe was teaching us for real. That these images. Here's this horrific image in the center. This is great time that devours us all. We all are death. We all are grains of sand in the hands of great time. And yet, this figure says, "Do not be afraid." And this figure says, "Life is a gift." Besides that,
the one over there with the opposite hand is going, "Wait, it's all right." You know.
These are the heads of sadhus here, and the tridents of sadhus. And I want you to think about these and think about the fact that yogis or sadhus are the same as shamans. This is the same as the shaman's staff. And getting serious about yoga, you meditate on a corpse for as long as you can take it. And that's called Shiva Shava. This crazy, wild yogi with his hair standing up on end and his implements and too many arms sitting on a corpse. There is an actual tantric practice of meditation if you want to meditate on impermanence. And so Shramana means wild gander, the wild gander that flies out into the distance. Some of you have read Joseph Campbell's The Flight of the Wild Gander, one of his best little books. And so it's possible that that Sanskrit word was imported into Siberia and became part of the Tungus language. Now, traditional societies always have rites of transformation, and this is the Inipi, or the sweat lodge. And Joe always loved, he would show this particular image, and he'd say, "Oh joy, the alchemist's got it right." This is Freud's psychoanalysis. You put the person in the cooker of the analytic situation, and all the contents come out. The dreams, the childhood experiences, the traumas, all of that kind of stuff. So any of you who have been through psychoanalysis, you know that actually this is a very accurate picture. So a little more complicated look now. We're going to repeat some of these themes over and over again. Selection and initiation, out of the body experience. So a lot of the themes of yoga, Buddhism, and even the themes of modern altered states of consciousness appear in shamanism. Manipulation of altered states of consciousness, trance techniques, hypnosis, reference to a spiritual reality, animism, everything in nature is alive. The vertical journey, heaven or the underworld, they're all parts of the shamanic experience. Mythogenesis, the origins, the incubation of the mythologies that we all know about come from the visionary experience of the shamans. The rescue, the loss and the rescue of souls. The shamans fly so they can go to the other world and bring back the souls of people who are ill or psychiatrically ill. The beginnings of ESP, clairvoyance, X-ray vision, precognition. And the special techniques, the use of the drum rattles, the sucking technique where you suck projectiles out of the body that have been put there by enemy sorcerers. Divination, ritual magic, the mesa of South American shamanism, and shamanistic invulnerability. By the way, these aboriginals are a mixture of all the races on Earth. I was always curious about that, and then I went to Australia and really studied it. There was a continent called Gondwana land that contained all the other continents in it before they broke off. And so you see that these Australian aboriginals, their dates go way, way back, hundreds of thousands of years. Our friend Robert Lawler has said at least the modern forms of aboriginal culture go back at least 40,000 years. So they're back around a little bit earlier than Lascaux. And you can see that they resemble black Africans, where human beings first came from. And they resemble Asians, and they resemble Caucasians, because they have these bushy beards. And here's our cycle again. And here is a friend that Robin and I met at a conference on shamanism that we put together about 14 years ago. And this was a shaman from the Shuar, or the Jivaro. They are best known as the headhunters of South America and Ecuador. And we really became friends with this guy. I won't go into all his stories now, but here he is doing a magical ceremony on our land in our stone circle, which you'll see better pictures of later on.